It wasn't just Andrew Benintendi today. It was JD Martinez, who has gotten hot.
That ball is gone! What a bullet by Devers!
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. As we keep finding things to talk about, even though there hasn't been a baseball game in a very, very long time. I'm Tom Karen at home, Jerry Remy at his home. Remdog, how you doing this week?
I'm doing good. I know one thing, TC, you're a lot busier than I am. I can tell you that. You've been doing that show that's going on in SNL, very good show. And I've been pretty much doing the exact same thing, going out for a ride in the morning, coming back. I got some good news today, though. I can finally start to pick up my cancer treatments again. I start on Friday, and that's terrific because they were canceled for a couple of sessions, you know, because of what's going on, obviously. So now they figure the hospital is safe enough to go into, and, you know, they've moved the location to a different location in the hospital. So I'll be able to get my treatment on Friday, which I'm glad. So I only missed two. That's not too bad. So I was expecting to miss more.
That's fantastic news. And so I assume part of that has to be because the surge is easing up a little bit, right? The hospital isn't quite as crushed as it was.
Well, I think more parts of the hospital have opened up for regular patients now, you know, and I think they've been able to isolate patients in certain areas, and they have kept the, you know, the cancer unit. Actually, they're using the cancer unit for some of the COVID patients and some of those who are just getting over it. So, you know, they've been moving things around, very busy moving things around. And, you know, they must be very comfortable about it because, you know, I wasn't expecting to go in this time. And I talked to the doctor this morning, and he said, the way the things we've got set up now, it's probably safer than going to the supermarket. So that's really good news. And I'm pretty excited about that. I'm glad because everything's been going good for me. And I was getting a little concerned about missing too many treatments.
Yeah, understandably. It's weird. That makes me think it's such a weird moment we're in right now. I mean, all of this has been weird. We know that. But it seems to me until the last week or so, my mindset and everybody's mindset seems to be, boy, this is never going to end. Now we start to see a little bit of a glimpse of light, but it's not, you know, it's not all the way yet. So it's a weird stage because you're going to do that. We're starting to, you know, my son's thinking about going out and getting a job for the summer now that college is over in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
We can't get ahead of ourselves. It's too easy to get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, that's the big concern for me is, you know, you see some places like Georgia starting to open up everything. And it's like, I think that's a little bit crazy right now because, you know, this thing could spiral around and come back on us again. So, but, you know, I think, you know, these doctors and professors and all, they're all doing a wonderful job with this and they're doing a terrific job. They're doing the best they can possibly can with something they haven't had to deal with in the past. So people are starting to take, you know, open up at a slow rate, which I think is the right thing to do. I saw where Governor Baker today put another 2 weeks on Boston, you know, as far as keeping it shut down. But then it sounded to me like, you know, if everything's okay by then he's going to start slowly opening it up the state. So at least, you know, at least there's some positive things coming out of there where you're not looking into the next month and saying, oh, you know, we got another full month of this. You know, we got a couple more weeks of it, and then maybe things slowly will start getting back to normal. And, you know, that's all we can hope for. But, you know, we want it to be safe. We definitely want it to be safe. We've gone this long now. It's got to be safe.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You know, Billy Andrade, the golfer from Rhode Island.
Yes.
Senior Tour. He was he's on the Champions Tour now. I talked to him for the show earlier today, and he said he's in Georgia. And he said it's crazy because people are just flocking. He said he's near some golf courses. He said it looked like the 4th of July over the weekend. It was crowded. People were sharing cards. So that's the worry part, right, is when you open it up, how are people going to react?
Exactly. And they've got to take these guidelines that they put out, you know, by these steps, these phase 1, 2, and 3, and they've got to take the guidelines. Social distancing, as Dr. Burke said yesterday, is probably going to go on all summer. So, I mean, you know, you've got to be very careful out there. I see the beaches in Florida are packed, the beaches in California are packed, and I understand people are tired of being in, but the fact is, I mean, you know, I think maybe we're a little older than a lot of these people, so we kind of get it a little bit more,
right.
And we know how devastating this can be, and you know, hopefully they abide by the rules, because if they don't abide by the rules of step one, they're never going to get to step two, and this might be a whole rotation of things starting all over again, so. It really bothers me when I see that, you know, when I see people, you know, buzzing through these steps, And it doesn't make much sense to me. I don't get it. People are dying. They're still dying at an incredible rate.
Yeah, it didn't become a less deadly disease overnight. There's no doubt about that. The little bit of Red Sox news, we did this last Tuesday, and it came out Wednesday morning. Wednesday afternoon, Major League Baseball finally came out with their investigation. Took a long time, and there wasn't a lot to it, was there, Jerry? What'd you think?
No, there wasn't. You know, if you put the Astros and you give them a 10 for what they did, I would give the Red Sox somewhere around a 2, maybe a 3 for what they did. There really wasn't much there. And let me explain this, Steve, you know, how this works. This was more like what we used to do in the old days. The only difference is that, you know, nowadays they have the video, so they can study it before and after games. They're not supposed to use it during games, which the Red Sox got caught apparently using it in mid-game. But the other thing about this is trust. Do you really trust the information that you're getting? You know, and I would be willing to bet, and I can say this from my time playing, that the majority of the players that I played with didn't want the signs because they weren't sure they were getting the right signs from second base. And in today's game, where they're constantly changing the signs almost on every sequence, if you watch Porcello do a game and you watch the next time that he does a game, or if you rewatch one, and he would be always giving a sign after he threw a pitch before, when he got the ball back to his catcher. He would hit here. He would hit his elbow, and he would hit up here. So that was what he was doing in those particular times, I believe, is giving what sequence of signs do you want. So that means he was changing on every pitch with a man at second base or even with a man at first base so it wouldn't be picked up by somebody else. So that's my point. When I was on second base and we had no video, it was my job to try to pick up what signs or location they were using. And sometimes you could pick it up, sometimes you couldn't. But the majority of guys, Jimmy Rice and Yad, we were talking about this during spring training. We all agreed none of us wanted the signs because we didn't trust we were getting the right signs. Now, that's pretty much what the Red Sox were doing. It was a little bit less complicated, or more complicated, I should say, than what the Astros were doing. So I put this at a 2 or 3 for them, and I feel really bad for JT Watkins.
Yeah, he becomes a scapegoat.
You hate to see this all fall on him for something that I don't even know how many players were using. My guess is the majority of the players were not even using this decoding system.
And to be fair, he claims his innocence to the end. He said he wasn't doing it in-game. They said there was enough from the interviews of the players, and the players had immunity. So there's a lot that goes into this.
Yeah.
And we may never really know exactly what went down, except in the end they lose a draft pick. That hurts. Nothing on Alex Cora. So we'll see what that means in the long run. But I want to go back to you as a player real quick. Were you any good at decoding signs? Were you able to pick them up?
Certain guys, you know, the signs in those days weren't quite as complicated. You know, most teams in the old days would do the first sign after 2. So, you know, the catcher would put down 1, 2, 2, 2. So that probably meant a curveball because it was the first sign after 2. Yeah, but I played the pitchers that were absolutely out of their mind with this stuff because they were so paranoid. And we used to go sometimes with outs. If there was 1 out, it was the first sign. If there was 2 outs, it'd be the second sign. You know, if there was nobody out, it'd be the third sign. I had a pitcher in Anaheim, Bill Singer, great pitcher for the Dodgers for many years, came to Anaheim at the end of his career. He would use the scoreboard, and you'd have to add up the balls and strikes, and that would tell you what count they were going to use. And it was very confusing. By the time I figured this all out, I didn't know what was coming, and I had to know because I was at second base. So this has been going on for a long, long time, and they're changing signs more now. They're changing them almost every pitch in the big leagues right now. So that makes it more difficult, I think, to even pick up. But when you're doing something as egregious as putting a camera in center field and banging trash barrels, that's about as bad as it can get. You know, and that's why I say that's a 10. Red Sox probably a 2.
And, again, that's why Alex Cora was suspended for that. Not for what happened with the Red Sox. All right, we were talking at the beginning about maybe getting closer to reemerging from all of this. And with that, we're seeing sports now start to get closer. NBA is opening up practice facilities next week or training. I think only 4 guys can go in and work out, no coaches, so no organized stuff yet. A lot of talk about hockey coming together by the end of the month. And then Jeff Passan on ESPN had a really long piece come out Monday about some possibilities, and some of these, and you and I have been talking all along about, can you do this? Can everything be in Arizona? You know, you've got 30 teams in one location. That seems a little tough, but
Right.
We're hearing ideas, the NHL and now Passan talking about maybe multiple locations where five or six teams gather and then there's no flights. You just play those other teams.
Yeah.
And it might not happen till July or even August.
Right.
Which gives them time to get this together. But it sounds to me more and more like this is going to happen. The commissioner, Rob Manfred, says that he is fairly certain there will be baseball. I know at the beginning you didn't think it would happen with empty stadiums, but do you feel more now that it might?
Yeah, I think that certainly moving in that direction. And when I read the same report yesterday. I didn't read the whole report because I got tired of reading. It was so long. But, you know, I kind of got the gist of it. And you helped explain it to me before we came on air. And that seems to make the most sense of anything that I've heard of so far, because you don't have to get on airplanes. The problem I still see, and I see some pushback from the Players Association, because they're still going to be separated from their families. Now, they're talking about situations where a team will be quarantined in a hotel and your family can be in another hotel. Well, what happens when the family comes to visit or you go visit them? Does that mean you're going to be retested? You know, I think testing is a big part of this thing, obviously. So it sounds interesting. It sounds very complicated to me to get, you know, to a point where we're going to do this. And I'm actually changing my prediction. You know, I in spring training, I said, we're not going to play any baseball until July 1st. And I think I'm going to have to push that back now and say, you know, I think there's a reasonable chance that on June 1st, you may be able to start spring training and hopefully come back in July for a season, as you were speaking about, TC. That's a possibility to the way things are trending right now. But the testing is going to be, you know, up to snuff. And they're going to have to really convince, I think, the players on this, because I think a lot of players are pushing back from any idea that doesn't have them playing in their own ballpark.
And you've got, obviously, a whole, you know, what's interesting, as always with baseball, you've got big market teams like the Red Sox and Yankees and Dodgers where there's so much money on the line, small market teams where the margins are pretty thin. And,
right.
And within the players, you've got a Mike Trout who says, my wife's pregnant, I'm not going to do this. But
right.
Mike Trout has made a lot of money. You know, for every Mike Trout, there's a young single guy who's just making his name in the game and says, no, I will do whatever it takes to play baseball. But that's the hard part, is getting them all together and agree.
Exactly. You know, you've got a union that's so big, it's hard to get together. And usually the guys that lead the union are the big names.
Right.
You know, they're the guys that are making all the money. You know, those are the guys that kind of have the most say in it. And if they become outspoken, then it becomes a more difficult thing to have happen. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And, you know, a lot of what happens this year could affect next year, because you've got the agreement coming up.
That's right.
So, you know, it's really kind of a mess right now. And I'm not sure whether this is going to float, you know, with the baseball players. I mean, they're going to have some of the big guys jump on board, and then they're going to have to go out and try to convince everybody else to say, you know, maybe this is a good idea. Maybe this is what we should do.
Did you watch the football draft at all over the weekend?
I did watch some of it. Yeah, I watched until Belichick picked the two-way player. So
or his dog did. We don't know if it was him or his dog who was sitting.
Yeah, it was a great shot. Yeah.
So here's what dawned on me over the weekend, and I'm not a draft guy in any sport. You know what I mean? I keep track of them, but I don't like to watch them. I'd rather watch games. But there's nothing else on, right? So we all watched it this weekend, and I was expecting it to be the worst, right? You're expecting.
Yeah.
It was really good. I almost thought it was better in some ways, because you saw these kids sitting at home with their families. It was humanizing, which the NFL isn't humanizing. But what it got me thinking after, Jerry, was if we watched that, which was different from anything we've ever watched, and we enjoyed that the way we did, maybe I can watch a game in an empty stadium on TV. You know, maybe we will learn to watch these things differently if we have to.
I got to tell you, you know, from our perspective, that's fine. You know, I don't care. If they have to open up with empty stadiums, I don't care. From a player's point of view, it's a different feeling. And I know Ed talks about this a lot. The energy that you get, the adrenaline you get from playing in front of the people is a huge, huge difference. You know, it really is. And when you go out there, like in spring training, and you're going through your drills or you're playing an inner squad game, there's very little heartbeat going on through in those, you know. And but if it is a season and it does mean something, maybe they can get that same adrenaline going. But it really is hard without the fans in there. And that's another issue I think that maybe, you know, come across with the Players Association too, you know, not having fans in the stands. But you've really got no other option right now. You know, like I said, they're talking about having this all summer. So there's either going to be baseball without fans in the stands or there's going to be nothing at all. And, you know, I hope there's something because I've had about enough of this.
I think we all have. And last thing I'll say about that, Jerry, is if there's no fans in the stands, and I know the players have pushed against this in regular season games, but I think this is a chance to have players wear mics or put mics in the dugout. Oh, there's going to be no crowd sound, so let's listen to the game. Let's use this and make it a positive.
Look, I've been pushing for that for years, and I know it's the players that don't want to do it. I get that. But, you know, you gotta have confidence in the people who are going to be doing this, and they can bleep out whatever they want to bleep out, things that shouldn't be heard, things that – and I'm not just talking about cussing. I'm talking about other things, other conversations players have on the field. But I think it brings – an inside to the game that you don't get to hear. I think that's really great. That new football league tried that. And I found that kind of interesting. You know, I really did when they were giving, sending the plays and I'm going, man, how can I remember these plays? I don't get them. You know, I don't understand anything about this, you know? So I think baseball would do itself a favor if they could do that, but they've always resisted that. Yeah. And it's because of the players. And I kind of get that. In my position now, I would love to see that become part of the game. I got to say, when you talk about the draft, the only thing I didn't like on it was Goodale. I mean, he was not made for TV.
Listen, he's awkward when you see him in person with fans, and he was even more awkward trying to look at the fans on the monitor. I mean,
how about when he's telling the people on the fans, cheer,
yeah,
cheer.
Yeah, Well, and then the Patriots come up, and it's a whole wall of people booing him, which was perfect.
Yeah.
That'll never change. Yeah. Hey, all this week we're showing the 2004 Red Sox, which has been, you know, if you're going to show something, let's go. We're showing all 11 wins, and it started Monday night with game one. And you know, we think back on them winning it, and we all think back about the games at Yankee Stadium and the comeback.
Yeah.
But it was pretty wild to go back and watch game one of the division series. You know, you forget that Schilling hurt his ankle in that very first game. Yeah. That's when it all began. And how they were still dealing with the shadow of Aaron Boone from the year before. Like, you know, it's easy to think now about how they broke the curse, but it is really remarkable when you go back and watch it from the beginning, what that team was able to accomplish from the 86 years behind them to being down 3-0 against the Yankees to then just steamrolling over the Cardinals. It was really something.
Well, you know, TC, they had a group of guys, a group of characters that I've never seen before, like on a baseball team. You know, I know the Oakland Athletics back in the day, they had some characters on their clubs and they continued to win pennants, you know. The Red Sox were very similar that year. They had guys that nothing seemed to bother them. You know, when you had a guy like Millar out there, I mean, you know, nothing seemed to bother him. You know, Manny, you know, nothing bothered him. You know, and it was a weird group, you know. It was a great group to follow and a great group to be around. And you're right, they carried all that pressure, especially after the 2003 season. But they put that behind them, and they just went to play baseball, and they all played up to their ability, you know, and past their ability. And that was the great thing about that club. And it's the one I keep saying I'll never forget, because we were in the studio. You know, I was in the studio with you through the whole thing. Yep. And, you know, it was just, like, amazing. And I remember saying, you know, at the end, I said, you've got to see a celebration like you've never saw in Boston. And that was the case. That was the case because Boston was so hungry for a baseball championship. And these guys did it. You know, they were the guys that did it. And the best part for me is I enjoyed these guys. You know, there's a lot of clubs you follow that you don't really, you know, they're all right, you know. But these guys were fun guys to be around. And I'll say one thing, they were fun to be around. But when they put their uniform on and went out to play that game, they played the game hard. And they played it the right way. And they certainly deserve everything they get. You know, throughout forever, they deserve everything they get.
And it's 2 weeks of games we're showing, and next week will be in the World Series. And we'll talk about the championship and you dodging baseballs on the duck boat and the parade and all that. We'll do all that next week. But this is – so this drops Wednesday. Thursday this week is when we begin with game four of the Yankee series. And remember, they'd gotten crushed 19-8 in game three. And I remember – doing the pregame show with you out on, it was then Yawkey Way, Jersey Street now. And it was before, it was like a 5 o'clock start on Sunday was game four. And it was dead. The Patriots were playing and there was nobody. Scalpers were trying to get rid of tickets for half price. This game four of a Red Sox Yankees playoff series, there wasn't a person on earth who thought the Red Sox had even a 5% chance of coming back.
You're exactly right, and I was one of them. You know, I didn't think there was any way that they could, you know, come back. Maybe come back, win a game, maybe win two, but no way come back and win the series. And you're right, the game before was so awful. It created an atmosphere. It was like a funeral around Fenway Park. It was so dead for a playoff. It was, you know, here we go again. Same old stuff happens. Yankees come in, beat us. We're going back home. That's it. They're going to go on and win another world championship. Well, it's, you know, just you rewrite the book, and it's amazing how it turned out. But I remember sitting there, and it was like, my goodness, this is horrible. I can't believe this is happening. You know, I really can't. I couldn't believe they were losing games the way they were losing them in down 0-3 in that series.
And it's game four now. They're down in the ninth inning. Mariano Rivera's on the mound. I mean, it's not just coming back from 3-0. It's coming back to tie the game in the ninth off Rivera. And that sequence of Dave Roberts stealing the base, and you were a speed guy. You were a guy who stole bases. We've all watched that a million, you know, what three pickoff throws to try to get him. Take us through that dance. You know, you've been there. None of us have been there. When the guy knows you're going to try to go, and he's trying to get your timing, and you're trying to get the right moment. Take us through that cat and mouse game a little bit.
Well, you know what shocked me about that is I was surprised Rivera was throwing over there, and I was surprised Robbins was going. Because this is like, if you get thrown out, this is the end of the – you get thrown out at second base to end a series. And I that stunned me that he was running. And Rivera, who almost never throws the first base, was throwing over there three different times to try to pick him off and try to, you know. And all of a sudden, there he goes. I couldn't believe it myself as a base stealer, because I would have had to retake that sign from the third base coach saying, wait a minute, you really want me to run and you want me to be thrown out here at second base to end this at Fenway Park? Are you kidding me? You know, it would have been shocking to me to get that sign. But Tito gave the sign, you know, and they gave it to Roberts, and he pulled it off, barely pulled it off at second base. And then we all know what happened after that. But
it's so close. You said barely pulled it off. I mean,
so close.
Terry Francona told me once, every time he watches it, it gets closer. He goes, one of these days I'm going to watch it, he's going to be out, and we didn't win.
You know, in a day of replay, he may have been out.
It's unbelievable. And that's, you know, and again, there's still a lot of work to do after that stolen base. Miller's got to drive him in. Ortiz has to end it. But that one moment is when everything turns.
And I was absolutely shocked. And I got to tell you, as I said, as a base stealer, you know, when I was young and I could really run, that would have scared the heck out of me, because I don't want to be the guy that's going head first into second base and then I'm out and then we're all walking off the field and people are booing us and, you know, I don't want to be that guy, you know. But, they had something up their sleeve, and you could run on Rivera. Everybody knew you could run on him. But the surprising thing was that he threw over as many times as he did.
Does that make it harder for you as a runner? If he's throwing over, is that with timing at all, or is it just making it?
Yeah, you know, if the guy, like, never throws over, which he almost never does, he's easier to time, obviously. And the more he throws over there, you're going, wait a minute, what's going on? Why is he doing this? You know, why is he doing it? So what they're trying to do is obviously tie your legs out a little bit by diving back into first base. It also gets you a little bit closer to first base and say, look, we're not going to be afraid to pick you off right here. Sometimes when a pitcher does that, I'll scratch a stolen base. I won't do it because, you know, they're waiting on me. They're just waiting on me to do it. They didn't scratch it. They just kept on going, you know. So it was pretty amazing.
You know, it's amazing when you look at that series, and you played in it. You played in 78. You should have been the hero in 78, but he throws his glove out and he grabs it.
Thank you, TC.
I want people to remember that, you know, that could have all been different if not for the lucky grab. But everything in history had gone against the Red Sox, right? It was the old hammer and the nail. We used to talk about it all the time. Yankees with a hammer, Red Sox with a nail. And in that series, starting that night, you know, that's on base. The next day, Tony Clark, right? If it stays in play, the run scores. Instead, it's a ground rule double. Everybody holds up. Remember, Wakefield was pitching in extra innings, and everything's getting by Veritek, but he holds on to the final strike with a guy on third base. Like, I don't know if we remember, if we noticed it in real time, but suddenly things were going. And ever since then, everything goes our way, right? Yeah, the Patriots win everything, and the Red Sox win World Series. But we weren't used to that. It was all so strange and new.
Oh, no, we were used to not winning anything. We were used to, like, you know, well, when it comes to the Yankees, we're going to choke. You know, that's what the story was back in 1978. You know, we won 99 games, but we choked. You know, that's – and can you imagine sitting home and having that, you know, hearing that kind of discussion when you win 99 games in the season? I know we had a big lead, you know, and I know we blew the big lead in the second half. But by the time it's all over, we're both at 99 wins. And we got one great game to play for the championship. We lose it by one run, and we choked. You know, it would drive me crazy. And I say, I can't wait till next year because, you know, I felt that team was going to go on and just win a couple of championships. It was that good. But, you know, it never happened. But that's then. And like, that game keeps coming on TV, and I don't want to see it. I keep telling people, and I keep getting the messages from people, you know, oh, I watched that game at 78. You had a great game. And I said, well, I'll tell you what. I don't watch it anymore. If the score changes, let me know, and I'll put it on if we win. You know, but the 2004 changed everything. Changed the whole feeling about the Red Sox organization. Changed the whole feeling about our fans here in Red Sox Nation. Now they feel like we can be World Series champs, but we can beat the Yankees. That's what they were really hoping for.
It really is remarkable because it's not often in sports you can look at one season as a sort of turning point. And it really was. I mean, they won again in 07, and then that gave them legitimacy, and, you know, they won four overall. But that comeback, and like, I remember we were in studio, we're at Fenway, and you know, I remember Ortiz gets the walk-off in game four.
Right.
And you and I think it was Eck, the three of us are going to the studio, and we're all saying the same thing. Oh, we got to come back tomorrow night. They're never going to win four in a row. Why are they dragging this on? You know, the next night when they won in 14 or whatever it was, and now it was going back to New York, that was the first time you start to think, okay, now it's going back to Yankee Stadium. Maybe the pressure starts to go against New York.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they probably felt two different things. You know, a little bit of pressure, like, you know, we couldn't put them away. You know, we couldn't put them away, but we still got to be feeling good because we're going back home.
Right.
You know, that's how you kind of how you feel as a player. You know, you're disappointed in the fact that, well, you still got some wiggle room and you're going back to a Yankee Stadium, you know. So it had to be a strange feeling for both sides. I think more pressure really on the Yankees because they had this series won.
Right.
They had it won. And all the Red Sox were doing were taking shots and going out to play baseball, right?
Schilling in Yankee Stadium with a bloody sock.
Yeah.
And I know Curt Schilling is a polarizing guy and you love him or you hate him, but that night on that mound with whatever cadaver tendon had been slapped on his ankle, I mean, that's a Willis Reed type of moment. I mean, that's a guy who comes up out of the injured and is able to pitch you to a victory.
Yeah, I will never forget that as long as I live, you know, and I have tremendous respect for Schilling. Not only for that, but for a lot of things throughout his career. But, you know, I remember watching him warm up, and I'm going, this isn't going to happen. He's already bleeding. You know, I don't see how this can possibly happen. And it did happen. And that was pretty amazing stuff. And I give him an awful lot of credit for that. And then all the rumors came out. Oh, it was just, it was a magic marker on his sock. It wasn't really blood. That was blood. You could tell the way he was pushing off that night. You know, it wasn't quite the way that he normally does. So, you know, that was the whole thing was really amazing. It changed baseball here. You know, I think Yastrzemski changed baseball back in 67. You know, they used to play in front of 4,000 or 5,000 people every night. He put butts in the seat, you know, when he had the MVP season and the Red Sox went on to play St. Louis in the World Series. He put people back at Fenway Park. But the 2004 team, in my opinion, comes next. Because they won it. They actually won this thing, and they got people to believe that, man, the Red Sox can actually win this World Series. There's people that haven't seen this in their lifetime. There were people that were saying, I wish my grandfather was still alive. I wish my father was still alive to see this. He always wanted to see this.
Yeah, well, and remember, the old studio, we were in the ballpark. After game seven, and it was bedlam outside. And I just remember we went on the air and had a camera showing up to Kenmore Square, and there were a million people in the streets. And I remember you saying, like, I've never seen anything like this.
No, I've never seen anything like that, especially around Fenway Park, right? I mean, we've seen it with other sports. We saw it with the Celtics many, many years. and the Bruins, but we didn't see it with the Red Sox. And they were, I remember trying to get to the car that night, and, you know, I thought I was going to go out and get bombarded by fans, but the fact is nobody cared. They were all partying so much. I just kind of wiggled my way to my car, and I got out of there with no problem at all. But it was as Ed says, it was party time out there.
It was party time, no doubt about it. Rem, that was fun. That flew by. And next week we'll talk about the championship and winning it in St. Louis and all that, which was really cool. But that Yankee series has been a lot of fun to watch on Ness and starting this Thursday. So great news about your treatment. Good luck with everything.
All right. Same
and
to
we
you.
Will do this again next week, buddy.
Maybe what you need is about 5 more shows. You love it.
Just sit here. Well, I don't see my wife anymore. She's upstairs. I don't see the family. It's like I'm going to work. I go downstairs and they don't see me anymore. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. We'll do it again
soon. All right. Take care, TC.
All right. That's Jerry Remy. I'm Tom Karen, and that is the TC and Jerry podcast.